Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You're listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It, with Scott Dudley and yours truly, Maria Wyatt. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874. And, of course, we're also on podcast at KXORadio.com.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome, world. Welcome, listeners.
Welcome to the summer heat. It's here now.
Here and we're glad y'all have all of your kids up and listening, because we are the voice for wellness, and you know, kids should be hanging out and listening too, because they could be well. And thanks for joining us, and for all those school employees that kind of were always trying to catch us like in between times, and now you're hanging out for the summer times. Welcome aboard. I hope your jobs are all safe and everybody's cool for the summer.
And you want to give us a call? Our phone number is 337-8874.
Absolutely. Otherwise, just kick back and listen and enjoy us. And again, welcome aboard. We're here today with a guest. Her name is Marcela Perdomo, and she's got a master's degree, but she is a behavioral services coordinator for Motiva Associates, and she's going to talk about all that Motiva does for the community this morning. Yeah. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure to be here. My first experience at a radio, so it's very exciting. I'm going to talk a little bit about Motiva Associates and the services that we provide here in the Valley. Motiva was established in San Diego over 10 years ago, but here in the Valley, our director started coming and providing services about 10 years ago to San Diego Regional Center from the Imperial Valley. We have seen a growth, we have seen an expansion of our services for the past 5 years, and we have expanded our services, and I'll talk a little bit more about the services that we provide in more detail, but the nice thing to see is that we have been able to employ people from here, from the Valley, and train them, and have these people provide services to families from here, from the Valley. So I'm from here, and so it's a nice thing to see that we have
the San Diego people were really happy to get local employees. I bet.
Yes,
I think it's difficult for San Diego people to come from there to here.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so it's nice. Our supervisor still comes here once a week, so he likes the Valley a lot. So that's a good thing. And but we have most of our people are from here. So
originally, you guys come down to serve San Diego Regional Center. Which, who are they and what did they do, and how do you serve them?
Uh-huh. Well, San Diego Regional Center serves families who have children diagnosed with developmental disabilities. So the main population that they serve is autism, mental retardation, and it goes from mild mental retardation to profound mental retardation, cerebral palsy, and Down syndrome. That's the population mm-hmm. that we work with within the San Diego Regional Center program. And we also have different programs under the San Diego Regional Center. One of them is called Behavior Modification Services, and in that program we go to the homes and observe the behavior, collect data, and we develop an intervention plan based on the hypothesis of the behavior. So basically, a lot of what we do is behavioral work here in the Valley. In San Diego, Motiva has other services such as counseling services and family therapy, individual therapy, and couples therapy. But here in the Valley, we are providing behavioral services. And so within the Behavior Modification Services program, there is no age limit, and there is no as long as the client is a regional center consumer, we go in the home, and a lot of it is providing training to the families to how to teach them how to deal with a behavior.
Now, how do you determine who qualifies for your service? I mean, the behavior, because I'm thinking about autistic mm-hmm. children. You know, their behavior could be erratic.
Mm-hmm.
That could be everyone.
Yeah. That's,
or how? What would it be distinguished? You know, what he'll get, they get services, or they don't get services, or is it everyone gets services regardless?
Well, they have their own criteria.
The regional center, that
mm-hmm.
is, right?
Mm-hmm. And so they refer us. once they refer the consumers to us, it's because they were approved by them. But basically, they have to have a challenging behavior. And it doesn't really have to be aggression or a tantrum behavior. It could be any other type of challenge, such as self-stimulatory behavior or inappropriate sexual behavior, things like that. Basically, when we think about challenging
behavior... You went there at 7:42 in the morning. You already went there. That was like the right at 8 o'clock.
Well,
stay tuned. We're going to talk about some really interesting
stuff. But what do you mean by that? I mean, just here, I'm thinking about a 6-year-old or a 7-year-old or. But you meet the needs of whatever age, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you're talking mostly about adults, or also children.
With the last behavior that was mentioned.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
you can mention it again.
Yeah. It depends. That's why we go in the home and assess the behavior. If it could be called sexually inappropriate behavior, but maybe it doesn't have a sexual component to it. If the child is a child, but he could be.
I go back to some sort of, I don't know, 70s terminology. If it feels good, do it. When you've got people with certain social delays that aren't reading the social requirements of the moment
right.
very carefully,
right.
If it feels good, do it. Kind of works.
Uh-huh. Right. So. It's just a lot of it is providing alternative behaviors to that are more appropriate, or just teaching them the right place, the right time, and it's not just saying no and that's it. It's just no, not now, but you can do this other thing instead.
Okay, so within the San Diego Regional Center, mm-hmm. you've got these, which is for developmentally delayed individuals,
mm-hmm.
which range in age
ages,
from
yeah.
very young to adult.
Yes.
You've got this population, and most of those people, I would assume, at some level have behavioral challenges.
Right.
Because that's part of the impairment of the condition is this difficulty behaving in various types of settings.
Mm-hmm.
So they give you a list of people in the morning and say, hey, go. Do you do the initial assessment work, or do they?
They do the initial questionnaire to see if they qualify.
Right.
For
so regional
services.
Center gets them in the door, but then do you do the behavioral analysis thing?
The first interview, the initial assessment is done by our supervisor. His name is Ernesto Corrales, and he's the director of
yes.
Motiva Associates. So he does the initial.
He's the one from San Diego, or
yes.
Okay.
So he comes to the Valley once a week to San Diego Regional Center. He does the initial assessment, and then we go in the home and continue assessing. And basically, the assessment, it's about 12 hours long because we need to collect data. We need to train the parents on how to collect data because we're not in the home every day.
That's intensive.
Yeah.
12 hours.
Yeah, it is. It is. But that's plenty of time to help us help the family.
I would guess that 12 hours of assessment really clarifies the points of engagement.
Exactly. And that's what we want to do. We want to have a clear hypothesis to the problem behavior in order to have efficient interventions. Because if we just go in and try to intervene without having the hypothesis, what is the function of the behavior, then it's going to be really tough. We might be just reacting to the problem mm-hmm. instead of being proactive. But we need to have a function of the behavior to begin with. And so in order to have that, we need to go in and observe and have parents collect data, and that's how we assess that.
Okay, so how easy – okay, so you see, you're a master's level person, right? And where did you get your master's degree from?
University of Phoenix.
Okay, so you see, you're going towards this MFT thing, right? Therapist
yes.
thing, right?
Yes.
How easy for you has it been to buy into the notion that we are mechanistic behavioral beings? Because it seems to work pretty
okay,
good when
you
break it down
that
way, huh?
What do you mean by that?
That basically we are stimulus response. that you know, there's some certain conditions involved, obviously, because you can't really directly connect going to work with eating unless you kind of do all the in-between things of paychecks and bank accounts and shopping and all that other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, we are responding to our desires for certain types of human satisfaction things
mm-hmm.
and responding to those in fairly mechanistic, fairly straightforward ways. You know, makes you happy, go towards it. Makes you unhappy, go away from it.
So where are you trying to say?
Well, I'm wondering for her as this therapist person, as this, you know, maybe you studied Freud or maybe you studied even feelings, and now you're in this program where it's really straight behavioralism. It's really functional analysis. What does this person want? How was that a difficult pill to swallow? Was that
In other words,
take a little buy-in.
Okay, so in other words, based on what you've learned at the for school,
yeah, absolutely.
Now you're in the real world at a job. How
yes.
different is it, or how?
Well, I think it was
from applying what you learned or
in school to what I'm doing right mm-hmm. now, which is merely behavioral work. Well, I was lucky to start working at Motiva as soon as I graduated from University of Phoenix, and I was lucky because I was I started to get my hours signed. So being an intern, I'm still a marriage and family therapist intern. I have learned different types of theories, but basically, it is a nice component to see the two things like behavior and the different other theories like family systems and things like that, because we're dealing with a behavior that we need to make sure that we can observe it and measure it. And that would be the behavioral work of it. But we also need to assess the family and see how the systems, how the system in the family is
either supporting or not supporting.
Yeah, and if there's parents who are they themselves have a diagnosis, the family systems it really needs some work to do before we start assessing mm-hmm. the child. So we need to assess.
So what do you do in those cases when you know you get referred a child for? You know, for your services, and you go into the home. You know, you say it's 12 hours mm-hmm. to gather all the information. You gather all the information, and you're working with the parents, and you notice that, you know what, this whole family needs services.
Mm-hmm. So if we see a family that needs further evaluation, that's where we go to you to behave. We send the families to behavioral health because we really need to have that connection, that service that would be providing the families with all that they need. And we can't provide the medical treatment or the psychiatric treatment that many parents or the children themselves need. So we refer out. If we see, we try to have good networking with different organizations. Like about 2 weeks ago, I was talking to a person who's working at Center for Family Solutions, and he told me that he's going to start providing services, counseling services to families from here, from the Valley, free at this time. So
wow.
So we refer, if we see that there's a need, and I think there's always need for counseling services for everybody, I think everybody should take advantage of that. But a lot of the families don't want that. And I think it could be a cultural issue
it's
that
difficult.
We're scared.
Hi, Scott, I have experience because we work. I mean, we provide counseling for families, uh-huh. for the
whole
family.
Help me here.
No, well, just last night we had a session at the clinic with 8 people.
Wow.
Nice.
Two babies, 2 toddlers, the grandma, the mother, the kids, the brother.
Everybody.
It was just, yeah, 8 people. 8 people. So we had to use the conference room.
Very nice.
It was, we needed more room. But it's very difficult because when you're providing services for the whole family, you want them all to be there at the same time. But sometimes you know, some family members might not be willing for those services.
Right.
You know, they're not for the services. Mothers have to work. Maybe they have school. And to get everybody together,
mm-hmm.
sorry.
Well, and I could see counseling, I suppose, for some particular problem, right? I mean, like I want to, or we, the family, want to fix this or that. Okay, counseling becomes one of the options
mm-hmm.
in a variety of options.
Mm-hmm.
Some things aren't, that's kind of from a problem focus. Some parts of life aren't really problematic, you know, like just because there's a disagreement, for example.
Right.
And maybe even a disagreement that is fairly substantial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just like, what are we going to have for dinner? It's like, do we live in the city or something,
mm-hmm.
you know, bigger than that. Isn't necessarily problematic as much as part of the process of relationship and family dynamics and everything else. So, yeah, everybody needs all families need counseling. A tough sell for me as a family member. I'm already buying into some of the reluctance to seek help.
Yes.
Just from that standpoint,
mm-hmm.
is that you know sometimes just because it's not going the way you absolutely want it to go. Doesn't necessarily mean it's
that it is a problem.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's what I was saying.
So let's say that you provide the assessment, the 12 hours. You're done with the 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
How long are these services for? Indefinitely?
yes Yes, as long as the
behavior
is still there. So basically what we have is 6 months to provide with interventions, and then if we need an extension, we ask for an extension. If we see that the behavior is still high frequency, we ask for an extension, and they always give it to us. And so as long as the families are regional center consumers and they're willing and interested in continuing the services, they qualify, so we continue providing those services.
So you get this 12-hour assessment. At the end, you get like a paragraph that says, yep, they got a problem. What kind of report do you generate?
Actually,
it must be fairly substantial.
Actually, what we do while conducting the behavioral assessment, we start coming up with hypotheses,
yes,
and interventions. So at the same time, and within those 12 hours, we already start providing the families with basic interventions, or if we're sure of a hypothesis of a function of a behavior, then we start with more detailed interventions. But that is the nice thing, that they don't really have to wait 12 hours for us to finish and then say, oh, he's doing it because he wants attention. At the same time,
you can test that right away.
Right. Uh-huh. And so at the same time, they're provided with interventions. So sometimes we, within those 12 hours, we close the case because maybe it was tantrum behavior 10 times a day and it went down to 5 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
And like Scott said,
mm-hmm,
there are many things that are not a problem. Just because it's happening, it doesn't really mean that it is a problem. So I see, like, sometimes we have parents saying, oh, my child is tantruming a lot. And, well, how much is a lot? The nice thing about it is that we get to train people on how to think behaviorally.
Standardized
right. So they can observe and measure the behavior in order to be able to target that behavior, because they were just thinking, he's stubborn, he's this, he's just like his dad, and it's going to go away, or things like that. It's very difficult. We can't really observe that because people have different meanings of stubbornness.
Mm-hmm.
It's not observable.
Your stubbornness might be different than my stubbornness.
Right. You know,
stubbornness is indeed unique.
It's subtle.
Yes.
You don't know that I'm being stubborn.
So what is good for me might not be good for somebody else. So it's nice to do that, to train the families to really think behaviorally. And
so you catch something like that, and, oh, yeah, they're just like their dads. How do you break that down and make it tangible?
Well, the first thing that we need to do is establish rapport, right? We can't just go in and say, oh, no. Maybe he is, maybe
he's
not.
Hi, I'm the expert, and let me tell you what's really going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Just listen.
just go in
take
and
notes.
Say, well, what does – he's just like his dad. Well, what is it that he does? He's stubborn and he doesn't listen and he never does anything good, or he's always hitting, he's always behaving bad. And so we go
sits on the questions. Couch watching sports all day.
And so we ask more questions. Okay, so can you tell me a little bit more about it? He's not listening. When does he not listen? Like when is it, in the morning, the afternoon, or when? So we go in more detail to try to see clear behaviors. So is it in the morning when you have to wake him up and send him to school? I'm talking about the child, not the
mm-hmm.
dad now. Or is it at night when you have him
going to take a bath?
Yes, or is it when picking up the toys? So the parents get to see that it's not always like they usually, or at the beginning they might report, oh, he's always oppositional, he never listens. So then we come up with a list of things or times where he does not.
Well, when they're sleeping, they're quiet.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and so there are many parents who start seeing that and say, oh, well, then he does listen. Yeah, because when I say, well, how about when you ask him to come and play? Or we're going to go to Toys R Us. Let's go. Is he compliant with that?
Oh, yeah,
because he likes it. Okay, he is compliant. So we're just talking about compliance. And, well, then parents start seeing, okay, yeah, there is sometimes when he does comply, and then these are times that are the ones that we need to target.
Yeah, when he doesn't want to.
So that's how we do it when they come up with something like that. Oh, he's stubborn, he's like that. We just go in more details and try and see what is it.
So in other words, after you might just solve, or not solve, but just educate the parents, and provide some interventions in that 12-hour
mm-hmm.
assessment. And if that doesn't work, then you continue with the services.
Yes.
And that could last up to 6 months.
Uh-huh.
Or longer.
Or longer.
If
yes.
needed.
Yes. And many times we refer out. If There's more to it. There's psychiatric condition. There's more to it.
How common is that? I mean, we talked about the population that you're working with from the San Diego Regional Center having developmental delays. How common is it to have other types of conditions that are there at the same time, like mental health conditions or learning disabilities or other things that may make it more difficult to manage?
Mm-hmm. It is very common to see that there's more to it, such as children who might have ADHD and they might need medication or more intensive type of intervention, psychiatric disorders, and then family members who are diagnosed with or their drug and alcohol. Mm-hmm. So we really refer families to the right places where they can receive those services, because our services are limited in that area. So that's when we go in and refer to behavioral health. Most of the times that's where we refer and just have families go in and receive the assessment and see if they qualify for mm-hmm. further more intensive services or psychiatric services.
Is engaging with distressed families more difficult? And if so, what kind of things are you able to do to kind of cross that bridge?
Engaging with families.
Well, let's say you get a referral, and the kid's definitely got the developmental delay thing going on, mm-hmm. and you're going out to work on assessment, and you run into a family that's in distress, whose parents may have some mental health condition, maybe compounded by abuse, maybe compounded by some sort of substance use problem, and you knock on their door.
Mm-hmm.
Is their tendency maybe to say, well, thanks, but no thanks?
Yes.
And then, if so, how do you cross that bridge?
Yes, many times they say, no, we don't need the help, or they don't want us going into the home, because just going into, opening their doors to us is a big thing for, mm-hmm. for I think, all of the families.
Yeah, for anyone.
Mm-hmm. For anyone. And so they...
I mean, they have to pick up my house.
Yeah, if nothing else. Yeah.
Having to wake up and be ready at night. So if they say we don't want the services, we say okay. And many times they need what happens is that many times they need more services from San Diego Regional Center, and so they say, well, you need to go through the behavioral assessment in order to provide you with further services, mm-hmm. such as ABA, for example, Applied Behavior Analysis for children diagnosed with autism. We have that program too, and so many families want that, but they need to go through the assessment to mm-hmm. begin with. So that's a way of them opening the doors to us. And there are some families who don't want the services at all.
Do you come across a family like one that is in distress, a family that's in distress? Do you provide the services first, refer out before? Sometimes you can't provide services to the minor or to the child until the family gets stabilized.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because whatever, I mean, you invest those 12 hours, but if the family is distressed, that's
yes.
not going to... Those 2 hours is not going to, or 6 months, it's not going to help anything.
Yes, we have good communication with the regional center coordinators. Mm. And so we usually tell them, you know, this family needs
help.
Mm-hmm. And so we are referring this family. Or if the family doesn't want to deal with us, we tell the coordinator. And the coordinators have more contact with the families. And so they're able to tell them that it was recommended that they need other type of services.
Great. We're here with Marcela Perdomo, and she's working for Motiva Associates in conjunction with the San Diego Regional Center. We're going to take a break at the top of the hour. This is Let's Talk About It, sponsored by Behavioral Health Services. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the complete podcast version of Imperial County's Behavioral Health Service, Let's Talk About It, brought to you by KXORadio.com.
Welcome back. You're still listening to Let's Talk About It, your weekly wellness radio for Imperial and Mexicali Valleys, and we are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7. And, of course, our phone number here is 337-8874.
Bye.
Bye, Mario.
and never, don't forget, catch us on podcast or use the podcast to guide people to, you know, because sometimes you're like hearing the show, oh, the neighbor really needs to be checking this out because they've got this situation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you point them over and say, hey, go to KXLradio.com and you can find all of our shows there in a nice little podcast line. And you can either click on them to preview them
mm-hmm.
or you can click on the entirety of the show itself, although Mario is kind enough to cut out all of our malapropes and, you know, goofing around.
Not all of our, yours. let's make that correction here, live on.
Okay. Welcome back. 337-8874 is the phone number. We're here with Marcela Perdomo, and she works for Motiva Associates, and they work, amongst other things, I guess, with the San Diego Regional Center. Marcela, why don't you throw out your phone number for anybody who's interested in Motiva Associates and what they do, and then we'll jump back into this stuff.
Sure. Our phone number is 760-353-8500, and we also have a website. It's www.motivaassociates.com.
Catchy.
So you can see, it's a
and that's also includes San Diego and here, Imperial Valley.
The website tells of all the services from San Diego and the Imperial Valley, and the phone number is the one from our local office here in El Centro.
So we've talked about what kind of the context of what you do for San Diego Regional Center. Motiva is also involved with some other local agencies. Would you care to share?
Yes, sure. We also work with the preschools, with the federal granted preschools, such as the Campesinos Unidos Head Start and Migrant Head Start. And recently we started working with Early Head Start from the Imperial County Office of Education. And so there what we do, we provide mental health services. They need to have a mental health consultant that they can consult with on different types of aspects or things. That one is a little more general, because we can go into things like depression and anxiety and things like that. It's not only like behavioral work. So we can go into other things and do more things with families. But basically what we do there, we train staff on how to, with different, again, we go back to the behaviors, because everything is behavior, everything. Even thinking about eating today is behavior. So it goes down to behavior, and so we really teach, we're training teachers on how to, on basic principles of behaviors and how to address challenging behaviors that they always have, because the ages are from 0 to 5, so mostly it's 3 to 5, but early Head Start is their little ones, they're 2 years old, and so they have a lot of behaviors like the biting behavior and tantruming behavior, of course, because their communication skills are very limited, and so they communicate by doing other things that we don't want them to do.
We evolve. We evolve through those means of expression into more civilized things, presumably.
And so that's what we do. So depending on the program, they have different things that they provide to their families. But one of the Head Start provides continuous training to parents. And so we go in sometimes on a monthly basis and provide with a different topic that they might be interested in. And so a lot of it is positive discipline and things like that.
That could benefit anyone.
Yes. Yes, anyone.
Well,
spoken
myself.
By the parent of a four-year-old. Yes. I can hear it. So you identify mental health conditions in preschool populations, essentially.
Yes.
What if, and you offer types of behavioral supports for those people, both in the classroom setting and it sounds like with the parents to a certain extent.
Right. Uh-huh.
What if additional services are required? I mean, it gets kind of sketchy when you know, I've got a depressed three-year-old here with existential problems. How does that work?
Yeah, it's difficult. We use different assessments for if we. They
you don't use a 12-hour assessment on them.
No,
okay.
No, not that. That's a different program. But they use the ages and stages questionnaire. The three preschools do that, and that assesses that we go into the social emotional one. So that assesses the social emotional and a lot of it is behavior, excessive tantrums,
yes.
difficulty calming down, and
pre-verbal children. You're looking at behavior as demonstrated emotion.
Yeah. Right, and so
that's how they communicate.
Mm-hmm. So like Scott said, oh, I have a 3-year-old who's depressed. Well, let's talk a little bit more about it and see how we can help this child. And so the same way, if we feel that there is more intervention needed, a lot of the times we send them to San Diego Regional Center so they could receive an assessment there. We also, in the area of autism, we're certified in an assessment tool that's called STAT, screening tool for autism in young children, in toddlers and young children. And so it's an assessment that if they get a high score, that there might be a possibility that this child might have
an autistic spectrum.
Yes.
Right.
Type of disorder.
And so we send them to regional center. We send them the copy of the SAS.
How hard is it for parents? I mean, do you also help parents? You know, when we have kids, we all want our kids. We see their 10 fingers, 10 toes, and, mm-hmm. you know, you want for your baby to be okay, you know, normal. And how hard has it been? How do you approach parents to say, you know what, your child might have autism?
It's very hard for parents, and a lot of the times we don't tell them exactly what is it because we don't do psychological evaluations. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we just tell them, you know, he's having difficulties adapting to new...
So you go back to function.
Yes, basically. Go back to function and really being very detailed with the behavior that the child is exhibiting. And so he's spinning around, he's lighting up objects, and he's not playing with the toys appropriately in an appropriate manner. And they usually can see it. Like when we conduct the STAT, we ask the parents to be present so they can see. So it's a 12-item assessment, and it's on communication, play skills, and imitation. And so parents are there to see that if I tell a child, I have bubbles here, and the child is on the other corner of the room, he's not really interested in the bubbles, then they see it. And many times it's very difficult for them to accept it, and they're scared. What is next? What's going to happen? Am I going to be able to provide my child with what he needs? And so it's just giving them time. We really don't want them to say, okay, well, yes, I agree with you, Marcella, and I'm going to do everything that you're telling me. No, so just give them time and continue supporting that family in different areas that they might need.
Working with preschools.
Mm-hmm.
Preschool age
kids.
Interesting. What kind of behaviors are you seeing more, or what type? I mean, what is the major one, and what can a parent do?
typical behaviors.
How do you train them?
Typical behaviors in the preschool are tantrum behavior and aggressive behavior. Those are the two most typical ones. And again, we go in not in a 12-hour assessment, but basically doing the same thing, training the teacher on how to collect data, and because we're not there every day from 8 to 3, collect data and come up with a function of the behavior. So then we train the parent on how to do that also. So once we have a hypothesis, then we go in and provide with interventions.
So for example, a type of intervention, like a tantrum. I've read, you know, a lot of magazines, trying to prepare for terrible twos.
Yeah.
You know, I was, okay, what do you do? Tantrum. Some say just ignore it. Do something that will distract them.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do?
So different people say different things. Right?
Exactly. So what is the correct? What is it? Professional.
Well, we use evidence-based practices
mm-hmm.
all the time. So we don't get our interventions from the Internet or things like that. We really use the applied behavioral analysis, and within that there are many principles behind it, and it's evidence-based practices. So a typical tantrum behavior, the first thing to note is that children 3 to 5 have to tantrum. So like Scott was saying previously, sometimes there are some things that are present, not because we don't like it. It doesn't mean that
we're repressing tantrums, and those age children can lead to serious emotional and behavioral problems later on.
You know what I did
life.
Last time when my daughter got
it's
a tantrum?
First adolescence. That's
no,
what it's called.
No, well, you know what I did last time with my daughter? Mm-hmm. She wanted something. I said no. And I just remembered from you, and I said, that's okay. That's okay that you're sad and you're probably angry that you can't get it. That's okay. That's mm-hmm. okay. You can cry. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's
how'd good. That work?
Yeah, she cried for a while, and then she calmed down.
Yeah, yeah. And it's good to let them cry. So it is a very good intervention to ignore the tantrum behavior if there's no harm to self or others. So sometimes they're banging their head on the wall. You're not going to ignore that, or they're within the tantrum.
You tilt your head quizzically at them and say, "You seem upset."
Yeah, so it's a lot of ignoring, not giving in to the tantrum. So even if we don't give them what they want, but if we give them a lot of attention, like, oh, no, you're not supposed to be doing it, and you need to be quiet.
And I've seen that from parents, you know, don't stop it. And then I see them spanking them.
Yes.
So you want to cry? I'll give you something to cry.
So you're talking about function. Yeah, and you were talking about function. So if I'm putting two and two together, sometimes tantrums become a secondary way of getting lots of love and attention from a parent who's really concerned about you.
Right. Tantrums are very effective in obtaining attention. Even if it's negative attention, it's still attention. So they're very effective because us adults have a difficult time ignoring tantrums, especially if you're at a public space, place, like, for example, Walmart or things like that, at a store or what, a restaurant. Parents don't want to ignore the tantrum.
Because we believe that the tantrum is tied to our own ability to parent and our own worth as a human being by proxy.
Yes. I don't want to be embarrassed.
And that screaming kid is making me look like a completely incompetent person.
You know, when I was single and I didn't have kids, and I would see a parent with this child crying and everything, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, that parent is awful.
Oh,
you know, just can't control their kids. Can't they just control their kids? You know, just that's how embarrassing.
What's more unbearable than incompetence?
You know, just I'm like, I can't eat comfortably because I'm hearing this kid cry, mm-hmm. and then I became a parent. And I'm very understanding. Very understanding. Kids are very unpredictable.
Yes, yes, and definitely. So the parent has to deal with the tantrum behavior itself and society looking at
yes.
you and telling you that you're not doing things
mm-hmm.
right. And so the first thing that we do at the preschools, for example, at a problem like that with tantrum behavior with teachers, it's we take data, and if it's three tantrums a day, that's typical for children. So we look at the severity of the tantrum. If it's only, they might say, well, he's only tantruming once, but he's throwing chairs.
It's a particularly skilled tantrum.
Yes, he's throwing chairs around and throwing tables and things like that. Then the severity is, it's higher.
Well, don't get knives.
So you have
a health management issue.
Yeah, so
safety.
We still need to address
it's a
it.
Safety.
A safety issue, yeah. So, but a good tip to do is just to see if the child is not going to get harmed, just to supervise but not provide a lot of attention. Really, the best intervention is to ignore. That's if the child wants something, like a tangible or attention. A lot of the things when parents are at stores and they want something very expensive, it's important to provide them with choices.
Credit cards.
Because
no.
That's maybe for the wives, yeah.
Okay, if you really love your kid, give them your debit card, right?
Oh, yeah, right.
So just provide them with options, because the no, and that's it, it's very frustrating for anybody.
That's an ultimate, well, yeah,
so
even for us adults.
Even for us adults who we are supposed to understand more things than children, so.
Impulse control, it starts at a very young age,
yes,
and continues throughout the lifespan.
Really, like, do not give in to the tantrum. And so it's good for them to cry. I think if us adults would, if we would cry more often, we wouldn't be so stressed out. Because when you cry, there's like a psychological and physical component to it where you feel more relaxed and your mind clears off and you can breathe more slowly. And because we're usually very agitated all the time and we're
just
stressed
out. So. You know, that example that I did with the tantrum, the other time I also just ignored her and she fell asleep underneath the dining room table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so behavior 101.
And I took a picture of it.
Yes, she got tired. And so
she was tired.
The good thing to, the something very important that we need to point out is that when you start ignoring a tantrum, it usually, the tantrum increases before it decreases because they have this
what? You didn't
box
hear me?
Of tools. Yes.
Let me downshift.
That's right, because mm-hmm. the tantrum has a function. And so when you stop that function, they're like, I think I need to cry louder, and I need to cry longer, and I
She's
need to
not
do
hearing
more
me.
Things.
Yeah.
What's going on? Because they're used to getting attention, even if it's negative attention, they're used to getting it. So when us adults say, "Well, just
I'm gonna
tantrum,
break this cycle.
And I'm not gonna
cry,"
they get worse. So they cry longer, and so I tell parents, "Don't come back and wanna hang me or do something to me, because it's not
the later you give in, the longer it's going to last."
Yeah.
So the first two weeks are the most difficult ones. Once they get it, they really understand. And so they know with who, they know when. Children are extremely smart. And so,
oh, yeah.
So that's a good good tip with tantrums. So provide them with two choices. Let's say he wants a TV from the store, and you say, well, we can't buy the TV because we don't have any money right now, but you can get a lollipop or you can get some stickers. What do you want? Sometimes they're just happy to get something.
Yeah.
And sometimes they say, no, I still want the TV and I want
the
TV.
99 cent store.
Yeah.
It's great.
So just let
them. You can have your choice of 99 cent items.
Right. Yeah, so the same at home, you know. It's good to let them know of changes. Let's say they're playing or they're watching a nice movie, their favorite TV show or something like that, and it's time to go take a bath and go to bed. Mm-hmm. So it's important to let them know beforehand. You know, in 5 minutes, we're going to go take a bath and we're going to go to bed. And it's good to talk like if we're a team. We mm-hmm. are going. Either
well,
we
and
don't
a
go
little,
and
little empathy because,
yes,
you know,
yes.
How much do you like being pulled away from
right.
your favorite mm-hmm. show right before
right.
the end? You know,
yeah.
like, okay,
right.
we can move the schedule 5 minutes to accommodate the end of the show.
Mm-hmm. Right. And give them a reason for things. Sometimes we just say, no, you need to listen because I'm your mom. And that's it. And they're like, why, Mom? Because I say so.
Yeah.
And so it's important to really
just remember, when you're 83 years old and unable to fend for yourself, they're going to be telling you that same mm-hmm. line. And you're going to be like,
how do you think?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so just
that's
let
true.
Them know of what is coming. You know, in 5 minutes, we're going to go take a bath and we're going to read a book and we're going to go to bed. And if
so previewing
yeah.
the changes.
Yes.
Yeah. That's
uh-huh.
That works. That works.
Uh-huh. And so when the 5 minutes are up, it's important to follow through with what you said. So it's 5 minutes. We need to turn out the TV. Then you wait 5 seconds. If they don't do it, you do it yourself. And so, okay, we need to go take a bath. And be very
consistent.
Very consistent. And really do not give in. Sometimes they say, oh, Mom, please, 10 more minutes, 10 more minutes. We need to make
causes,
sure
that's
that we
gonna cause a
through.
Problem later.
Mm-hmm. So we need to have things clear for them because they don't really understand what's going on. So we need clear boundaries, clear consequences, follow through, and I think the most difficult one is consistency because that's what we have to do as adults.
So you're saying that having 3 tantrums a day is okay?
Depending on the severity.
Severity.
Of
if
the
they're
problem.
Not severe, they're just staring.
If
crying.
They're just crying. You
know, isn't yeah. your husband a little old for that?
Yes, he is.
When are they supposed to taper down to, like, 2 or 1.5 or something?
No, because, I mean, I would say, oh, my gosh, 3 a day, just crying or just kind of, like, upset. And
yeah, if they're for 5 minutes, 3 minutes, I mean, that's okay. I think that we do it internally, you know, if when we're out for our lunch hour and on our way back we see all the light signs there. The red, I mean, we tantrum. We're like, oh, I'm going to be late, this stop sign or things like that. We do it, but we do it in a more internal way. Sometimes we do it, if we're on our own, I think a lot of us really speak out and say something, mm-hmm. oh, I don't want to do this or, oh, but we still do it. So we're still tantruming.
So anytime our perceived needs aren't being met, we have that moment where we have to kind of
right, and that's okay
express
because
our
we're
displeasure.
Human beings. Mm-hmm. Yes, we don't have to agree with anything, and so we learn that sometimes we need to do things that we don't really like to do, but it's a process, you know, it's a learning process, and I think we do it. We continue learning throughout our lives. So
when does, based on age, when a tantrum becomes a problem? You know, it's 2 year olds, okay, 3, 4. Now they're 5, 6, 7. At what age? Okay. You know what?
Well,
is there an age limit? I mean, where it's appropriate for them to have a tantrum, or?
Well, because they are bigger, then the tantrum gets bigger. So that's when we go back to the severity of the problem.
Okay.
If a child is whining, if a 10-year-old is whining, ah, Mom, I don't want to do it. That's fine. But if he's still throwing chairs at the school,
okay.
like a then that's a problem.
So in other words, tantrums continue all the way till all through your lifespan.
That's
and,
what I
and
think.
They diminish in social inappropriateness.
Yeah, we do it in a more appropriate manner. Yes, definitely. So so that's a good thing for parents to remember. Provide them with options, and if it's not a harm to self or others, do not give in to the tantrum. But really,
be consistent.
Mm-hmm. And it's good to consult with teachers, to consult with other professionals, just so we're not ignoring all the time because the child might need something else. Maybe there is a sensory component to that tantrum. And so I don't want to say, I don't want families to say, well, Marcella said to ignore when the child is really having like an auditory difficulty or a sensory difficulty. So it's really
like
too,
what?
It's
like
a good
what,
idea.
What could that look like or what could that be going on in the kid?
Sometimes there are children in the autism spectrum disorder mm-hmm. who you can really see the autism very clear. So they might be high functioning mm-hmm. or PDD.
What is PDD?
And pervasive developmental disorder. Okay. And it's a
milder spectrum kind of, type of thing.
Yes.
Uh-huh. But it's still pretty
high
impressive
well,
in,
it's
by itself. Huh?
Well, the thing is that, you know, up until, what is it, 2 years ago, there was just autism. And now it's coming, it's a spectrum.
Yeah.
I
yes.
mean, there's a lot, there's a wide range of autism.
Mm-hmm.
From mild, very high functioning to very severe.
So what I hear you saying is there may be environmental conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So like and this kid, I can play this back into normal kids too, because think about taking your kid to the store when they're hungry and tired.
Right.
Oh, no,
now
no,
they're throwing
no.
a tantrum, and instead of ignoring it because it's a need-based, it's
right.
kind of
mm-hmm.
a need-based, it's actually, oh, I've got a tired, sleepy kid.
Mm-hmm.
I need to deal with that.
Yes.
Right. So that's why I don't want to say to ignore all the time. So we really need to consult with somebody else so that person can help you. And usually teachers or other professionals can help you pinpoint, you know, the what's going on around that tantrum. But that's a good intervention to use. Do not give in. If you're sure that he's not hungry, he's not.
Don't
he,
do anything.
He was fed.
I learned very quickly. Don't do anything when you're around nap time.
Oh,
they
yeah,
usually take their
yeah.
nap. Don't do that. Do it.
Yeah.
It's very yes. Do it way before early, or do it right after they wake up.
And
they're very happy.
Hassles.
Yes, I learned that. Yes, I learned that.
Well, and too
the hard
hot
way.
And thirsty, and you know, there's a lot of little kid things because they're not really good at self-monitoring and keeping themselves in this, you know, really perfectly dialed in place.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're not dialed in place, then things can go wrong.
Yes.
Not fun.
Yes, and right now that when we were talking about the sensory component, that there might be something else. I remember a case. We had a child at a preschool who, as soon as he came into the classroom, he would tantrum a lot. He would tantrum basically nonstop, like we would say. So tantrum. We thought it was because he didn't want to be in the classroom, and so we had a lot of hypotheses going up. And so the thing was that this child was in the autism spectrum. Had not been identified at that time, and so the lights were too bright. The lights of the classroom were way too bright
oh,
for
wow.
him, and so it was something more. So that's where I say that the ignoring shouldn't be used all the time. We really need to know
mm-hmm.
that the child doesn't have further needs. But just a typically developing child, the ignoring really works.
Mm-hmm.
Do not give in into the tantrum. And it's good for them to cry. Just let them cry. A lot of parents have a lot of difficulty letting their children cry.
Because that's how we were, you know, even as babies. Oh, don't cry, baby,
mm-hmm.
don't cry, you
mm-hmm.
know. No.
So,
but that's how we were, you know.
Uh-huh.
Don't cry. No.
Yeah. Go ahead, cry.
Or even better, oh, it's okay, you're not sad, you don't hurt, you're not, you know, whatever.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Negating the emotion.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh.
No, yes,
that's
I did
right.
hurt. Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. Yes, I am sad. Yes, I am angry.
I didn't
yeah.
hurt. Come on.
Yes, yeah, so it's difficult. I think it's difficult for parents and children and grandparents, of course. I have seen in my experience that grandparents have a lot of difficulty ignoring tantrums.
Oh, yeah, they give in to it.
Yes,
yeah.
All the time. And then they tell you, well, you were worse and things like that. But then you see the child just tantruming for everything, and then you see that the child is not acquiring the social skills, or it's not really reacting in an appropriate manner to frustrating things that are presented to him. So it's really changing the way we think, and really thinking that ignoring a tantrum, it's not a bad thing. Actually, you're helping the child regulate, self-regulate their frustration, and so find another means of regulating that or of expressing that, because they're tantruming and we don't give in. So they say, well, you know, this is not working anymore, so I'm going to take it out of my toolbox. I'm going to try to use my words. Okay.
Three of my four grandparents were totally immune to tantruming behavior.
Really?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking back and go, whoa, I never got anywhere with them that way.
So there's a lot to talk about, I think, when we go into behaviors.
Okay, we are near the end of the show. I need to throw your phone number out there one more time. Motiva and Associates.
It's 353-8500. 353-8500.
I remembered it. People can call you for what's the range of things here? What kind of stuff?
Can they get services or it's everything by referral?
Everything is by referral. That is, we're trying to change things to have services available to everybody. But at this time, it's through referrals. So
but if you have
to learn more, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yes, so definitely. If your children or you're planning your preschool, they're going to go to preschool soon.
Yes.
You know, if it's one of the Head Start, Campesinos Unidos, or Migrant Head Start, or through ICOE, they can get services to you.
Uh huh. So early Head Start from
early
ICOE.
Head Start, yeah. Or at the San Diego Regional.
San Diego Regional Center, yes.
Well, thank you for coming aboard today, Marcel.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me
Your first time on the radio.
You did such a good job.
How did you do?
It was a nice experience.
You brought these notes and piles of papers.
I know.
I brought my notes and I said, I better not forget anything, but I didn't even need them.
Would you like to do a brief reading to conclude the show? Are we good?
I think I should come back to another show.
We'd be more than happy to welcome you. It feels like we could have kept going for quite some time today.
Thank you very much.
Your phone number again for the last time?
353-8500.
All right. 353? There we go. And so next week, stay tuned.
Next week we have Imperial Valley Regional Occupational Program. We have Ivan Soto, and he was here before. And he's going to be talking about environmental youth services for youth that are geared for our environment. So,
the new green wave kind
of thing. You know, we have to give our kids, even our toddlers, not to waste papers, conserve water, other sources of energy. You know, so get our youth involved in it.
That sounds like a great show.
Yeah.
We'll see you then. Okay. Have a great week.
Okay, bye-bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.